Mother in the series of taped Christian Science lectures brought to you by the members of Second Church of Christ Scientists San Francisco by Florence Southwell. Mrs. Southwell will be introduced by Mr. Trent Karpitz.
Good evening. The members of Second Church warmly welcome you to join with us tonight in the uplifting spiritual experience of a Christian Science lecture. Our lecturer, Florence C. Southwell of Miami, Florida, is a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship. She has been a Christian Scientist since early childhood, when her father was instantaneously healed of a serious illness. Before entering the healing ministry as a practitioner, then teacher and lecturer, she was an assistant manager of a large business where she had many opportunities to prove the practicality of Christian Science in the daily human scene. The title of her lecture is God's Love and the Human Need. Mrs. Southwell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Karpitz, and good evening, everyone. You know, there's one thing we can all agree on right here at the very beginning of our talk tonight, and that is that the age we're living in is an age of
great contrasts, an age of tremendous opposites. Now it's a time when many grand vistas of good are coming into view. On the other hand, we see alarming conditions going on all around us. Now we've moved rapidly into the exploring of outer space, and yet we hear increasingly of the urgent need to purify the atmosphere and the water of this planet if life on Earth is going to continue. Now the astronauts who've traveled in outer space, including those men who've actually walked on the moon, are speaking increasingly of the vastness of the whole universe. They're just eager to search out its mysteries and its wonders. And they're even now talking about taking a trip to Mars, perhaps. But I wonder, did you ever stop to realize that the truth, the actual truth of this universe, including man and the earth we live on, is being revealed today not so much by space travel as it is by the science of the Christ, by Christian Science. Now, this science is proving through its healing effect that the universe, including man, is spiritual and that it's governed by spiritual laws, by the very laws of God. Christian Science, as you may know, is based on the great Christian concept that God is love. But it's adding to this concept of God a new concept that is also infinite divine principle. Now, by this we mean that he's the source of the law that governs man and the universe. You know, he isn't whimsical or capricious in any way at all. His tender care for all that he creates is carried on through this law of love, through this invariable, infinite law. And this is what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about how an understanding of God's love, how an understanding of this law of love can help us find the things we need. Practical things like income or health or happiness. You know, the Bible says that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. That every good thing essential to human happiness and well-being does come to us from God. Now, these are the familiar words of James. I'm sure you all know them. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Christian Science today confirms this declaration. In fact, it has a perfect correlative to it. In Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, makes this arresting statement. She says, divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. So let's consider then how our immediate needs are supplied by God, how divine love does actually meet every human need. And right here, right at the beginning of this discussion, let's be clear about one thing. Let's understand one thing, that human needs are needs for good. They're good needs. They're needs basically for spirituality or spiritual ideas. They're not needs for material things or material objects, because our needs basically are for what is spiritual. But then you might stop me and you might say, well then, what is the difference between these material things we want or would like to have and the spiritual ideas you're talking about? Well, a spiritual idea is divinely mental. Now, it's a divine concept that starts with God, who is infinite intelligence or divine mind. Now, as we begin to see this, we can see that whatever appears to be material is simply a distortion of the spiritual fact, a misconception of what's spiritual. Let me show you what I mean by this. Now, if you or I were looking through a glass that had a flaw in it, something like a ripple, then everything we looked at would appear to be imperfect, wouldn't it? It would appear to be marred or distorted. So it is with what the physical senses perceive. Now, the things they see are simply their own concepts objectified. They express the limitations of these senses, and so they're always imperfect. They're always material. But spiritual ideas start with God. They're ideas really of divine mind. Now, we don't see them materially. We don't see them with the material eyes, but we're very conscious of their existence because they come to us as we express God's own qualities, and they do meet our need tangibly and concretely. Take joy, for instance. Many of us feel we need to express more joy in our lives. Well, how do we get joy? We get joy by expressing this quality naturally, because man, in his true nature, in his nature as a child of God, already has it, you know. Now, most of us express the quality of honesty very naturally. If we're going downtown for a business transaction, if we're going to cash a check at the bank or buy some clothes, we don't stop first and put on the quality of honesty, do we? We just go out. We express this quality naturally because we know we're honest. But sometimes, when it comes to expressing joy or happiness, we feel we don't have it. And so we have to get it, or we have to get something that gives it to us before we can be happy. But you know, we need to express joy, happiness, just as naturally as we do honesty or intelligence. Then we'll find all of our days are filled with its brightness. We'll find it manifested naturally around us. Now we'll find it manifested in all the ways that we need humanly, such as friendships that have real meaning, activities that really contribute something to others. So can't you see then that our real needs are for what is spiritual? They're needs for spirituality, not material objects or money. We need to know that God's love for man results in spiritual blessings, and these in turn enrich our human experience at every level. Security, health, home, achievement, or success. These things are added naturally to our lives as we become spiritually aware of God's love for man and of man's sonship with God. Now there's no one thing, I'm sure of this, that's more needed everywhere today than a true sense of security. Now, there's no generation gap here either, because both the young and the old need security. The nations of the world are certainly seeking it, aren't they? A few years ago, there appeared in the bookstores a tiny volume about the Peanuts characters. It was a humorous little book. It was titled, Security is a Thumb and a Blanket. It was just full of illustrations and little anecdotes that showed what made these characters, Linus, Charlie Brown, Lucy, and even Snoopy the dog, feel secure. Now, these were homely little illustrations, but they did show that security is a feeling, that while it may be symbolized by the things around us, still deeper than that is the feeling it brings. The very last illustration particularly made this point. It showed little Linus kneeling in prayer beside his bed at the end of the day, and he was saying, security is knowing you're not alone. Now, as I say, these are simple illustrations, but they do show that security is an idea. It's something we feel in our hearts and in our minds. And, of course, we're accustomed to think of many kinds of security. We think of financial security, don't we? Physical security, emotional security, and we hear a lot about social security. But governmental or welfare provision alone will never give anyone real security. The only real security there is lies in an understanding of God's love for man, in the abundance of good He's eternally bestowing upon His beloved child. Now, we're not conscious of this kind of security until we accept it, or unless we accept it, as a spiritual idea. Feeling God's love for us, we feel secure and safe. And it's only in knowing God's presence with us that we can feel really protected and secure. Now, like little Linus, we need to know that we're not alone, that the Father's love ever surrounds and protects us. To be really secure, we need to know that we're loved of God. Now, basic to our need to know we're loved is our need to know God. Who or what is God? Well, Christ Jesus taught that God is the Father of all, that He's the source or the origin of all that exists. Now, in coming to know God as divine love, we have the clearest concept of His being. It's knowing God as infinite divine love that gives us the clearest understanding of His being. Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, in speaking about the infinite nature of God, she says, divine love is infinite. Therefore, all that really exists is in and of God and manifests His love. A true sense of security lies in an understanding of this fact, because God is love and infinite. Evil has no power to harm or destroy, because there's no evil in God, because He's infinite, ever-present good. We feel secure as we come to know Him. And of course, there's no way we can know God with more completeness and assurance than as Father, Mother. It's only as we know God as Father, Mother, that we can know ourselves as His children. And it's knowing God as Father, Mother that makes us aware of our full relationship to Him. We're indeed children of God. And God's great love for man has already bestowed all good upon him. In one of his letters, John writes, we love him because he first loved us. Feeling God's love for us, we feel secure and safe. And it's only in knowing God's presence with us that we can feel really protected and secure. God's love for man makes us conscious of our sonship with Him. Mrs. Eddy speaks of this. She says spiritual love makes man conscious that God is his Father, and the consciousness of God is love gives man power with untold furtherance. Now the power with untold furtherance that comes through the consciousness of God is love really confirms to us, to each one of us, our status as sons of God. It's this love that today blesses and heals and opens a way for the treasures of good to come into our lives. And as I've said, it's this love alone that can give us a real sense of security, or a true sense of being protected and secure. So just as a true sense of security comes to us as we feel loved of God, so does the right sense of health. Health, you know, is a quality of mind, not a condition of matter. Even medical men are beginning to see this. A few years ago, the American Medical Society established the Department of Medicine and Religion. And a front page news item in a metropolitan newspaper quoted a group of doctors as saying that the majority of patients treated by general practitioners and internists are not organically ill. They said that the physical was but one of four factors, that the others are social, mental, and spiritual. Now, spiritual healing comes from God. We're healed spiritually only through the power of God, through the power of His Christ. A mother and father proved that this was true at the time of the premature birth of their son. Now, the father wasn't a Christian Scientist, and at times he deeply resented his wife's dependence on it for healing. Some months before the birth of their child was due, the wife asked the husband to call a Christian Science practitioner for help because she'd learned from her doctor that he was apprehensive for her life as well as the life of her unborn child. The practitioner lovingly assured the husband that she'd pray for his wife and for his child, and then she added that while he wasn't a Christian Scientist, he did know how to pray. And so she asked him to pray in his own way. The next morning, he called the practitioner to tell her that his wife was out of danger, but there was almost no hope of saving his little son because his lungs weren't formed sufficiently for the breathing necessary to sustain life. Well, the practitioner reminded him how prayer had helped his wife, and she said that she'd pray for the baby, and again she asked him to pray also. Now, the practitioner knew that God is life, that this life is spiritual, and that man has life because God gives it to him. She remembered this statement from the Bible: God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that He is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. For in him we live and move and have our being. Now, these are familiar Christian truths, aren't they? They're also scientific truths, and they help the practitioner see clearly that this little boy, in his true nature, was the perfect child of God, and that God had already given him life and breath and all things, that his health or his state of well-being was divinely bestowed upon him by his Father, Mother, God, that he did in fact live and move and have his being in God, in infinite love. Well, this baby lived, and the parents were told that they were indeed fortunate, that it's generally accepted that children born under circumstances like these do not survive. Today, this child is a handsome boy. He's strong, he's happy, he's normal in every respect. Health, Mrs. Eddy says, is the consciousness of the unreality of pain and disease, or rather, the absolute consciousness of harmony and of nothing else. Then health is mental, isn't it? It is a condition of thought, not a condition of matter. Now, good health comes to us as we become aware of our sonship with God. You know, this awareness of our sonship with God is really the Christ. And it's the Christ, or the awakening that Christ brings to us, to our real spiritual nature, that heals in Christian Science. The Christ is Emmanuel. It's love's presence ever with us. that Christ is the essence of love that gives our prayers power and impetus. Now the scientific truths, which a practitioner uses at the time of healing, need an awareness of love. They need a deep sense of compassion to make them effective. Such a Christly way of healing establishes a true sense of health. It demonstrates health as a quality of spirit and not a condition of matter. Then, what appears as a human need is met at the same time. Now remember, in the restoration of this tiny baby to perfect health through spiritual means alone, this healing actually restored the substance of lungs necessary for proper breathing. The medical verdict had been that the lungs weren't formed sufficiently for the breathing necessary to carry on life. But when this baby joined his family at home, he was in perfect physical condition. So good health comes to us as we feel loved of God, as we begin to understand, to accept our sonship with God. So does the right sense of family and home and happiness. Now the human need for these is legitimate. A right sense of family and home and happiness does much to maintain a healthy condition of thought. And there's nothing that'll more readily give to our young people today true spiritual and moral values than a happy home where there's real love and affection. Money and the things it'll buy will never give to our young people today the things they're seeking. It'll never bring to the world today the true sense of harmony and brotherhood the whole world is seeking. Money has no absolute value for one thing. It's what we call, it has a relative value. That means to me that it means different things to different people. Like the little brothers who had such a differing concept of money value. Now, Tommy was the older one. He decided one day that he was going to hire his little brother, Jimmy, to be his servant. So he said, "Jimmy, I'll give you 10 cents a week if you'll be my servant." Well, little Jimmy was a cheerful little boy. He said, "Okay." The older brother thought a minute and he said, "You know, I can't give you 10 cents. I can only give you 5 cents. Little Jimmy was still happy. He said, "That was all right." So the older brother came back again and he said, "You know, I can only give you a penny a week." Well, the little brother wasn't quite so cheerful, but he said, "Okay, okay, but please don't raise it any lower." Differing concept of money value, because money has no absolute value, but family does, because family is a divine idea. God is the father and the mother, and man is a family term. It includes all the sons and daughters of God. Now, relationships in the human family should be rooted in this concept of family. Pure affection and harmony in homes will come as this concept replaces the old sense of family. And brotherly love and peace among nations is going to come as the true concept of God's family replaces the old sense of mortals hating and distrusting one another. Now, trust and friendship are spiritual. They're ideas of divine love. Mrs. Eddy says pure humanity, friendship, home, the interchange of love, bring to earth a foretaste of heaven. They unite terrestrial and celestial joys and crown them with blessings infinite. So trust and friendship are spiritual. And I'd like to tell you about a little experience I had a few years ago that showed me in the most natural way what wonderful qualities these are, these qualities of trust and friendship. I was traveling in the Netherlands at the time, and I was out for a walk early one morning. It was a gray, dark kind of a morning. And while the area I was walking in was interesting, still I felt very much a stranger in that land. For one thing, I didn't know the language. But I apparently didn't seem to be a stranger to a little boy. I was standing at a street corner, waiting for the light to change so that I could cross over, when I suddenly felt a tug on my skirt, and I looked down into the lovely face of a little boy, about 4 years old. Now, he was talking to me in his language, naturally, and I, still feeling I was a stranger, reached down and I said, "But dear, I don't understand you." This he didn't accept at all. He simply brushed it aside, said again the thing he was trying to communicate to me. And then I understood. He wanted to cross that street. He'd obviously been told never to cross it alone, always to cross over with a friend. I reached my hand down. He put his little hand in mine and gripped it firmly. And we walked across that street like old friends. After we crossed over, he skipped happily off, and I stood there a moment watching him, still marveling in the presence of these wonderful qualities of trust, friendship, and the interchange of love. Now, isn't it just as possible? Isn't it just as natural, really, for the peoples and the nations of the world to walk together hand in hand in trust and friendship as it is for individuals? Now, as we understand and demonstrate in our own lives the truth of God's fatherhood to man and of man's brotherhood with man, we'll help the peoples of the world find their way to brotherhood and to harmony. As we understand and demonstrate the truth of God's family, we'll help the nations of the world find their way to a true sense of the family of nations. Home, too, is really a spiritual idea. It's the awareness of divine love in which we live and move and have our being. Now, we're never outside of its protective influence. The concept of home, this spiritual concept of home, will always bring about in our human life the kind of home we need humanly. Maybe large or maybe small, but it'll always manifest the qualities of beauty and order and joy and love. Because our home isn't really a place, you know. It's a continuing sense of love's presence with us, an awareness of the all-embracing love of God. Now, such a concept of home blesses the family that shares it. It blesses the whole world through the atmosphere of love and purity it exudes. Mrs. Eddy says home is the dearest spot on earth, and it should be the center, though not the boundary, of the affections. Such a sense of home does indeed unite terrestrial and celestial joys. It brings with it joys that are infinite, brings with it the necessity always to include our fellow man within the embrace of divine love. Because a true sense of love can only be unselfed and unselfish. Now, such an unself sense of love is essential if we're going to have happiness or if we're going to have well-being. Mrs. Eddy knew the value of family and home just as she knew the need for health. Now, she knew from some of her own childhood experiences that some of the dearest treasures on earth come from the interchange of love and affection that family represents. Her home and her family were typical of 19th century rural New England. The atmosphere in which she was raised was a religious one. It was one in which the Bible was not only read and loved, but it was lived. Both her mother and her father were religious people. They were Christian people. And each one gave to their children an interest in things spiritual. Now, Mary Baker's health was a source of much concern to her family, but her nature was always a loving one. Even as a child, she was eager to help those less fortunate than herself. One cold winter day, she gave her warm coat to another child at school. Then she walked home without one herself. She walked a long distance through a cold New England day. In later years, Mrs. Eddy confirmed the influence of her early family training and atmosphere. In Science and Health, she writes, from Puritan parents, the discoverer of Christian Science early received her religious education. In childhood, she often listened with joy to these words falling from the lips of her saintly mother. God is able to raise you up from sickness. And she pondered the meaning of that scriptural phrase she so often quotes. And these signs shall follow them that believe. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover. Now, it was many years after this that Mrs. Eddy actually discovered Christian Science. It came as a necessity to her because all attempts to be healed materially had failed. Her own healing came at a time when the doctor feared she wouldn't even survive through the day. Now, it was this healing that opened her thought to the spiritual truths of Christian Science. Mrs. Eddy loved naturally and spontaneously, as I said. She loved naturally just as the Master did. A friend who knew her well used Mrs. Eddy's own words to describe her healing work. She said, I saw the love of God encircling the universe and man. And that divine love so permeated my own consciousness that I loved with Christ-like compassion everything I saw. And then the friend continued, the way Mrs. Eddy said the word love made me feel that she loved even a blade of grass under her feet. So Mrs. Eddy brought her remarkable discovery, this discovery of life as spiritual. She brought it to the world through the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. This book has brought healing to just countless people around the globe. She established the Church of Christ Scientists to carry on the healing mission of Christian Science. Now, we spoke at the very beginning of our lecture tonight about human needs and about how these human needs are needs for good. You remember? We spoke of the need for security, the need for health, the need for happiness and home and a right sense of family. Well, there's another one we're going to talk about, which is also a need for good, a good human need. And this is the need for success or achievement. Now, you know, success is never material. It doesn't have a material basis. Success or achievement is really a spiritual idea. Now, by this we mean that when we utilize this idea in our human affairs, in our daily affairs, it enables us to bring every right endeavor to fruitful achievement. Now, this may be the passing of a college examination, or the establishing of a business, or the happy task of being a homemaker and a mother. But as a spiritual idea, success means utilizing the divine perfection that God has already established for us. Now, perfection is a divine quality, you know? It's the very nature of man's being. And success in any endeavor means expressing, utilizing this quality. One of Jesus' direct commands was, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect." So perfection is normal. It's natural to man. It's not miraculous. Christ Jesus manifested perfection in everything he did, whether he was healing the sick, or raising the dead, or feeding 5,000 hungry people with loaves and fishes. Now, he's truly our exemplar. He's our example, because he's shown us from his own human life, as well as from his divine ministry, just how to manifest perfection. He's shown the divine power that makes perfection possible. He's shown that it's a power that comes to us from God. So we can conclude from Jesus' human experience, his human life, that all work is holy if the worker is holy. Now, remember the years when he was working in his carpenter shop. We don't know exactly what he was making, do we? Might have been benches or tables or chairs. But we do know it was of excellent quality. He manifested excellence in everything he did. Mrs. Eddy points this up. She says, this spiritual idea, or Christ, entered into the minutiae of the life of the personal Jesus. It made him an honest man, a good carpenter, and a good man, before it could make him the glorified. So we can see from his example that we succeed in everything we set out to do as we manifest this divine perfection that's natural to us, that God has already established for us. Now, the manifestation of this divine perfection in our daily living is really coincidence of the divine with the human. It's the divinity of man's being appearing right where a mortal seems to be. Christ Jesus did his work successfully, and so he proved that man is a divine idea, that he's made up of divine qualities. As I said, his work was always excellent. We couldn't be made to believe that his work was ever shoddy or carelessly done, because he manifested excellence in all he did. His life was really an illustration of the coincidence of the divine with the human. An illustration of divine love meeting the human need. We can be certain of success, too, as we put the right motive behind our drive for success. Now, this motive shouldn't ever be a human outlining of what we want or think we want for ourselves. It should be the desire to glorify God in all that we do. And this kind of success is necessary to every one of us. We need to be workmen approved unto God, to glorify God in all that we do. Paul writes, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." Here then is the key to success or achievement for any one of us. The driving impulse toward it must be the desire to be workmen approved unto God, to glorify God in all that we do. Now, this is certainly important in the business world. A man I know demonstrated that success comes with right motives. Now, he'd been made second in command in his business, and he'd been promised that one day he and a relative of the owner would inherit this business. Well, all of a sudden, the owner sold the business, and then the new owners cut his authority considerably. He was simply consumed with hatred. He couldn't understand how a friend of so many years standing could have done such a thing to him. He also had a lot of resentment toward those new owners. Well, for 2 years he worked with this problem. He couldn't sleep at night, so he walked the floor for hours at a time. Now, during this time, he worked with a Christian Science practitioner who told him that the only way out of this problem was through love. He never let down in his church work. No one really knew what he was going through. He knew that his real need was for spiritual achievement, for spiritual growth. And this was infinitely more important than money or power. So he continued to pray. Now, he prayed in the way that he'd been taught to pray in Christian Science. He prayed from the standpoint of love's ever-presence. He knew that prayer, to be effective, had to be scientific. It couldn't be just a blind kind of faith or a random kind of prayer. And he knew that prayer that is scientific is based on an understanding of the Father's eternal relationship to man and of man's unbroken sonship with God. Now, praying from this standpoint, praying from the standpoint of his own unbroken sonship with God, he experienced the coming of the Christ. And it was the awakening the Christ brought to him that enabled him to see that all men have one Father, that enabled him to love his neighbor as himself. So slowly, the clouds began to lift for my friend. He was able to love the former owner, and he had respect for the new owners. He'd found his spiritual peace. Then, one day, the new owners called him into their office, and they announced that they were making him a vice president of that company with a very large increase in salary and many other benefits. In his own words, he said to me, "This good began to flow so rapidly and with such rapidity, I was overwhelmed. There were times when I declined certain sums of money my employers offered me. I'd overcome my love of money, and my only desire was to serve God and bear witness to Him. Then, just a few years later, he told me that he had been made president of this company. Now, the time and effort spent in establishing spiritual values had their spiritual rewards. They also had human rewards in every way that a businessman would measure success or achievement. In this experience, it was seen the essentials of happiness and security are spiritual, the natural result of being a workman approved unto God. And then the human need was met in every right way. And it's always right for the human need to be met. Spiritual values establish the heavenly presence with us. Now, heaven isn't a place. It isn't a locality. Our space travelers are exploring the physical heavens. But Christian Science is revealing the kingdom of heaven within. Within our reach now. It's the reign of divine love in our lives that meets every human need. This harmonious way shows the way to attain the good we need is open to every one of us. It's love's way. It protects us from believing we can get what we want dishonestly or in any wrong way. Love's way maintains the highest standards of conduct in every aspect of human living. In this age of technological advance, the world has great need of true moral and spiritual values. And for the spiritual understanding which alone give and sustain these values. Now, how to meet this need is well stated in a hymn. If we pray to Him in secret, lift to Him the heart's desire. We shall find our earthly longings all made pure by love's pure fire. Then upon the precious metal, God's own image will appear, faithfully to Him reflected, one with Him forever near. Thank you very much.
You just heard a taped Christian Science lecture brought to you by the members of Second Church of Christ Scientists San Francisco by Florence Southwell, entitled God's Love and the Human Need. There will be a taped Christian Science lecture next Monday at 2:30 p.m., November 6th, over KBRG.